Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Alfred Muhammad. The second, I'll be joined alongside my father, Imam Alfred, and today we will be discussing the current political climate, and we won't be delving too far into the candidates or into their policies. Particularly, we won't see any foreign policy debates here on Religion Means Alive. But what we will be talking about is the overall political tone and the future of American politics within this country. So with that being said, I'm going to ask my father a few questions regarding the political stratosphere and the current climate and the direction of this country, not only pertaining to the American people in general, but to particularly African Americans. So I'm going to start off by asking my father, what do you think of the overall tone of the political climate?
Thank you, Brother Alfred Muhammad, a part of the millennium generation. Millennials, great. New terminology we're bantering about here in Religion Means Alive, and he is a millennialist. Well, I have given tremendous thought to what is happening in the American landscape. America is going through a cataclysmic episodic, it's a change of an epoch. There's a new world coming in, and to use the language of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, it's an old world going out, a world of slavery, suffering, and death is going out, and there are some death rattles. And also, a new world coming in of freedom, justice, and equality. It's a global warming taking place. Not so much in the physical arena, there is in the physical arena, but I'm a spiritual politician. It is the politicians that are in the religious order that creates policies in the political order. I was very much interested in the debate or the discussion with Mr. Donald Trump, the president of the Trump Organization, and Mr. Chris Matthews of MSNBC, or actually of NBC. I thought he was the first real journalist to pin Mr. Trump down. Sadly, Mr. Trump was found with no clothes on. He was found naked. I was saddened to see the president of the Trump Organization, an impresario, a powerful promoter, one of the world's greatest salesmen, degenerate into a third-rate hustler, and actually what Governor Mitt Romney called a phony. I was saddened. It pained me as a human being to see a man who was totally on top of his game to just fall into the abyss. The world is not given to shows and games, shenanigans. And frankly, what I've seen on the entire political arena has been nothing but games and shenanigans. What do I mean by that? America, the land I live in, the land I love, the land I'm dedicated to, the land God decided to born me in, and I'm happy, I thank the Almighty God, to have been born in this great land. But it's a blooming deficit for both monetarily and spiritually. I think that's the backdrop of our discussion today. And we can see that there's a lot of pain, that there's a lot of angst, And there even is what President Jimmy Carter, James Earl Carter, I believe his real name is. I don't like calling these people by these names. James Earl Carter. A malaise. That's the background in which I think I can frame the discussion. So with that, I'm going to turn you back over to the millennialist himself, Mr. Alfred Y. Muhammad. I hope that in the next 20 years, starting now, we'll just offer great leadership to this greatest country that's been on the planet Earth.
All right. Well, with that being said, I'm going to ask you another question, and we can go. But I just wanted to further on your comment about malaise. What my dad is referring to is former President Jimmy Carter's speech, the malaise speech, or the malaise speech, however you want to say it, tomato, tomato. But what in that speech, President Carter outlined a plethora of detriments that the United States would run into the future. And a lot of those things we are currently running into now. He was saying this stuff in the 70s, 1970, whenever he was president, 76. He was saying this stuff in 1976, he was saying this stuff, you know. And he was talking about how the United States has placed an emphasis on materialism and all of these other things. And nowadays Americans don't try to help each other now. Nowadays Americans are on the whole me generation thing. And I just wanted to ask my father, has that really, really shown itself in the African-American community, particularly now more than ever?
I would like for you to kind of repeat the question again to me.
Well,
I was momentarily distracted because some people didn't know that we were on the air today. One young lady from Texas just posted on Facebook. She didn't know that we were on the air. I'm going to now be returning to the air on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. Saturday, I believe, because of some other engagements, Alfred Y. Muhammad will be the host. Hopefully him and Joe Muhammad until we get other hosts. And I will be on Mondays and Thursdays. And as a talk show, and we're going to have several guests, different guests that are now lining those guests up, but we're returning to the show. We had a sister that was helping us out, and we appreciate it. We love her much. Gaines, would you reframe the question because I was momentarily distracted?
Okay. What I was referring to was Jimmy Carter's speech about, you know, the malaise speech. We outline all the detriments that the United States will be facing in the next couple of years, and how nowadays the American people don't help each other out. Now it's more about me, 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 instead of us, us, us. And the speech received a lot of backlash. Initially it was good, but later on it received a lot of backlash from the public, including the president's colleagues. And I just wanted to say, this me, 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 instead of us, 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 have you saw this really play a part into the current state of the African-American?
Well, the African-American is beyond a malaise. The African-American is actually suffering from a form of intoxication and incineration. There was a physician in the state of California named Dr. Conrad Robert Murray. He was, however, convicted of manslaughter in the death, I would say the alleged death of Mr. Michael Jackson. And he was found guilty by a jury of giving Mr. Jackson, medical negligence to the level of criminality, and that he gave Mr. Jackson an overdose of propofol, and they said it shouldn't have been properly administered in a home. Well, I would say the millennialist preachers, which is the rappers and other entertainers, have given out young people, probably from 6, maybe 5 to 40, an overdose of propofol. It's a drug that, according to medical terminology, indicated to put one under a deep sleep. So that's one generation is under a deep. It's actually sleep. And they're nearly intoxicated off of this drug. The Reverend clergy, including the Reverend imams, have also placed our people under a propofol. I accuse one imam, big imam, who is a professional Arabic teacher, of also engaging in putting our people under propofol. I said, what do you mean, brother? You put them on propofol. Anytime you give someone a fruit that can be nutritious to the body, and it is fermented, it can cause intoxication. So Dr. Jackson, the rappers are giving our people informed intoxication. Our imams are giving intoxication. What do I mean by intoxication? They have given them rituals that's gotten them drunk that they no longer is Willie Brown's son or daughter. They can no longer see themselves as just an African-American who's up from slavery. They now think they are special. So they're drunk. You look in our neighborhoods, anywhere there's a Martin Luther King Boulevard, put a yellow light on it because you're afraid that you're going to go in a crime zone, a red light district. That's number one. Number two, there's no jobs there except that they're given by other people. So that's deeper than a malaise. America was in a malaise. America is now in a drunken state. When you have presidential candidates talking about the size of their penis on nationwide television, that's deeper than a malaise. What President Carter was talking about was the aftermath, the aftershock, or the future shock of what had happened in the post-Vietnam War, after what had happened in the fall of America, essentially, with President Richard Milhouse Nixon. These men had almost destroyed, this man had almost destroyed the country. And we had a plethora of other sad political figures. Now, some would argue that Ronald Reagan came and boosted the American spirit. Well, that's arguably not true. Number two, I think the problem is Mr. Reagan started us on a great deficit, financial deficit. A lot of which this country has not recovered from. I mean, we've had some temporary periods, but basically all this country's been is borrowing and just begging other countries to give them money. So we are in a very sad situation. But I, too, believe that goodness is on the rise, and I see now signs. I was with the chief rabbi of Israel. You happen to have been with me. I have been with the leaders of the religious world, Christian, Jews. I haven't seen much from the Muslim world, but I've seen the Christian world some promise. I love Pope Francis. It was very significant that he washed the feet of Hindus, Christians, and Muslims. Now, what does the symbolic symbol of him washing our feet? Now, if one got drunk on that ritual, he could have said, well, couldn't the Pope Rome gotten some type of foot disease, some kissing that feet? No. What he was saying is the feet represents the social nature of man, the social carriage of man. And he was saying that we serve in an equal capacity, that God, all the children of Adam are dignified. So I applaud him. I believe goodness is on the rise. I know America is in a malaise still. I also know that there's a lot of anger in America. And Prophet Muhammad said, don't be angry. Don't be angry. Don't be angry. So we have to get over anger because psychologists tell us that anger is a cover emotion for other emotions. Like what? Lonely, sad. People feel there's a lot of sense of intrepidation. I think that's why Mr. Kasich, Governor Kasich, that is, has decided to come from a kind of a gospel of hope and optimism. And he knows that that's really what the American people need, is a sunny disposition. If we got a sunny disposition of love and caring, we can get through anything.
You touched on, in the question and also in the answer, you touched on jobs in this country and how in the African-American community, oftentimes you'll see them talking about jobs and jobs and jobs. and they'll be talking about jobs, and you many will argue that the African-American race is a race of beggars. And, you know, that can oftentimes, that can infuriate the, you know, the African-American community, and rightfully so, because not all of us are beggars. We have a lot of small businesses, and we do have a lot of, there has been a good amount of job growth right now, but we aren't quite seeing the effects that we should be seeing. And oftentimes what we do is we go pandering to these politicians and all these different types of representatives in order to make sure that we get jobs in our area. So my question to you is, Brother Imam, what do you think African-Americans should do in order to stimulate job growth within our community so that we don't have to go begging to certain politicians, or shall I rephrase, asking politicians for jobs?
Well, first thing African-Americans need is a new brain. That's the first thing you need. And a brain that breathes on its own, that are not on life support machines by the Democratic or Republican parties, or a beggar to outsiders and philanthropic organizations. Why should I, a grown man of the Muhammad Booker family, my origin was Booker's own, I only use the term Booker because we were owned one time by the Bookers, and some of my family members still see themselves as Bookers. So if they see themselves as Booker properties, then they're going to wait for Booker to do something, right? The great master. Well, I'm a Muhammad. I don't see anybody doing anything with me. I don't want anybody to do for me that which I can get up and do for myself. If I can't heal myself, I'm going to a physician. But hopefully with my own resources. Even when you really think about it, it saddens me to see African Americans have to run and even look for Medicaid, Medicare, and all these programs. That's fine. But you know what? The Mormons, and there are even some Christian groups, have decided that they would band together and they have their own medical support program. So what I'm saying, but all is not lost. All is not bad. I think this is a powerful sign, dear people, from God. The Alfred Street, I want y'all to hear me again, repeat. I think this is a powerful sign from God. The Alfred Street Baptist Church of Alexandria, Virginia, my home state, listen, gave $1 million to the African American, the Museum of African American History. And Mr. Lonnie Branch said, no, we are not going to take Bill Cosby out of the museum. Alfred Street Baptist Church gave $1 million. So how can we create jobs? We got at least, I bet there are 10,000 African-American congregations that come up with $1 million. That's $10 billion. That means that Howard University should be able to get $2 billion in endowment. We could raise right now in 5 years, $200 billion. If we expand the historical African-American colleges, like the private ones, we would create thousands, hundreds of thousands of jobs from them. Then if we took over the fast food restaurant and bring food from the farms in the South, African-American farmers, and deliver it to the door, I ain't going to talk too much more about that because they're business persons. I'm talking to them going to do that. Create your own jobs. Why should a president go in? We're the only race. Well, when you come to talk to us, you can pander to us jobs. We should be talking about how to create jobs. We should be talking about how to become job creators. That's what many of the people in the Republican Party are saying. Become job creators, job generators. It's a child that waits for his parents to come and do something for him, that which he can do for himself. You know, because you live in my household. I'm often and constantly, sometimes frighteningly, pushing and demanding more and more responsibility. Not only that, Alfred, I push myself for more responsibility. I have accepted the role to be the greatest voice for the community, Imam W.D. Muhammad. And I have accepted to be the greatest voice for even the leadership of the African-American community. So if I'm going to accept that role, I got to put more demands on myself. That means I have to study more. I don't watch Empire. I don't have time for Empire. I'm too busy de-emphasizing empiricism, that scientific idea of making us fools, and I have to give it to them. They're doing a damn good job of it. You have someone want to ask a question? You want to ask me a question? Okay. All right. We don't like airtime, but I'm going to make a comment. You want me to ask you a question? So, Alfred, I would like to ask you a question. What do you see as the important factors in the political season? And you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. Send the announcement out again that we are on the air where religion means alive. Imam Alfred returns to the air, not as a preacher, but as a radio panelist, as a pundit.
What was your question?
I was asking you, what do you see in the current political season? I know you have political aspirations, and as one who is aspiring to political office, what do you see of the political climate? I know you have a particular candidate that you support, and if you wish to announce your support of that candidacy, I don't see why you shouldn't. And tell us why. Well, what is the season?
Okay. Well, I believe personally that the current political state of this country is it's somewhat of a sideshow. You know, I think that, I mean, I haven't been around too long. I've only been around for 18 years, but, I mean, for the time I have been around, which is, I mean, somewhere between Clinton and the current president, President Obama, I mean, I must say that I myself have never seen an election cycle like this. And I've, for as long as I've been around and as long as I can remember, I've always watched even midterm elections, local elections, you know, gubernatorial elections. I've always watched those elections closely because I find them pretty fascinating. I almost consider, you know, watch politics almost like it's a sport, like, you know, like it's the NFL, the Giants are playing and the Redskins are playing. I almost watch it like that. And I believe that the current political stratosphere is almost like a sideshow. You have, and particularly on one side of the aisle. Now, I like to tell people all the time that right now in my life, I'm not particularly leaning to one side of the aisle. You know, but if there's one thing for certain, the Republican Party, it is a complete mess. Anytime you have what's almost, it's almost a civil war within the Republican Party. I mean, you have, and it's been caused by the current president, of course, you know, the infamous Donald Trump. And it's so bad that even some of the statements that President Donald Trump are saying, a lot of the, and I don't like to use the term establishment, but a lot of the establishment, I'm using it anyway, the establishment candidates are pushing themselves away from Donald Trump, saying, listen, I don't want to have anything to do with that guy. And they're putting their support behind a guy like Ted Cruz, who they themselves do not like, and they know that he is just as bad, if not worse than Donald Trump, but they know he at least has a little bit of sanity within him, that they are going to put their support behind Ted Cruz. I was watching the other day Senator Lindsey Graham. I think he's a senator out of South Carolina.
Right.
And it looked like the man was having a complete nervous breakdown on the Daily Show. He was on the Daily Show. The Daily Show is like this, you know, this political satirical show on Comedy Central. And, they use satire and make fun of political candidates and make fun of things in the news. And so it's a comical thing. But the man looked like he was literally having a breakdown. He was laughing and he was making jokes. And that's something you don't, I mean, you see politicians do that. But when Lindsey Graham was doing it, when talking about his party, he almost looked like he was just nervous, like he was uncomfortable. And he was talking about, you know, laughing about Donald Trump and all that. And the man said, if Donald Trump gets the nomination and wins it, then I don't know what's going to happen to his party. He could permanently damage his party for the next 10 to 25 to maybe even 30 years. And that's something that I thought was pretty poignant. I mean, for him to say something like that while laughing, that's not a real joking matter. Lindsey Graham's been in the Republican Party probably his whole life. And if not, that's his current party. He's a Republican senator from South Carolina, one of the most red states in the country. They're not known to switch much, you know, despite, you know, the Democrats' attempts at, you know, a 50-state strategy. They're not switching much. They're a red state. And for him to say something like that just shows how uncomfortable he is and how really scared he is about the state of his party. But I'm not going to go in too much on the Republican Party because it is a mess. And there are some pretty good Republicans right now out there. You know, I think Governor John Kasich has given him a good name. But the Republican Party themselves don't know what's going to happen with him. He doesn't want to drop out. Ted Cruz, a lot of people don't like, but they're realizing that that's their best shot at winning a general. And Donald Trump, people are distancing themselves. But I think another point is that the current political climate has a lot of anger within it. It's a lot of anger. People are tired of these jobs going away, you know, these trade policies, you know, like NAFTA and CAFTA and all these policies that have driven the jobs away. People are tired of it. And they're also tired of a lot of the changes that have occurred within America as well. They like it to go back to the way it was before. So that's what you see with the rise of Donald Trump. And even on the other side of the aisle, Bernie Sanders, who is not really like Donald Trump at all. The man is not, his outlook on politics is completely separate. But he also talks about trade policies and wealth and how jobs are going away. And just to express who I support, because, you know, since my dad wanted me to touch upon it, I'm going to just come out and say I support current presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. And you may say to yourself, well, if you're in the middle, how can you support someone like Bernie Sanders? Well, I believe a lot of the things that Bernie Sanders is saying that Senator Bernie Sanders are saying is important, and his record matches it. I mean, a lot of times you have these candidates who come on TV like, you know, and like, I'm not going to name any names, but a lot of candidates come on TV and they say they're for these things when their record doesn't match it. I saw the other day on this YouTube channel called The Daily Conversation a C-SPAN interview with then Representative Bernie Sanders of Vermont in 1988, talking about the same thing, the growing income equality, the growing gap between the middle class and the rich, you know, how the middle class is disappearing, this economic populism. Bernie Sanders was talking about this economic populism back then when Ronald Reagan was president, And I think that's pretty spectacular that he was saying stuff like that back then, when really nobody else was saying. He's always stuck to his positions and stuck to his guns. You know, sometimes to his detriment, people get on him about that, about being a one-trick pony. But, you know, I think right now he is what this country needs. And I don't think it's really a young thing or an old thing, because I know some older people who are, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters. And I know that they feel the same way that I do, too. So it's not a youth thing. Right now, the youth are just a little bit more energized with their support. But there are some older people as well who support the senator from Vermont as well. So I just like a lot of his policies. He does a good job at energizing his base. And it's not just an energy thing for me as well, what he says about the trade policies and, you know, what's happening to the African-American community, I think is pretty important as well. I mean, you have Hillary Clinton, who has allied herself pretty well with the Congressional Black Caucus. They've all supported her. That's great. But right now, my guy, Senator Bernie Sanders, the man was actually fighting with the Civil Rights Movement, was actually doing these things tangibly. And, yeah, that's just my canon. But, yeah, I believe the overall tone of the political stratosphere is anger. And a lot of the Americans they're supposed to be angry. They have a right to be angry, you know, at what's going on in this country. So with that, I'm going to send it back to my father so he can touch upon this a little bit more.
Well, I frankly think I applaud Senator Sanders who I feel is in my generation and has been a phenomenal outside-the-box politician. And as a result of that fact, he has garnered tremendous amount of support. I also happen to agree with Senator Sanders that politics has been polluted by campaign funding. I hope that you visit in Washington, D.C. soon, that you will see as you travel the streets of Washington that the lobbyists and the corporate entities are the ones that really control government. If you were to visit Albany or Trenton, there's no government of the people by the people. It's government dictated from the business interests of the country. And I think that's what Senator Sanders is treating. And I think that there's a rising movement, as he called it, a revolutionary movement growing. I would say this about Senator Sanders. He's been on the case for quite a while. You know, and I know, Alfred, I don't support his social policies. I don't even know what I support his economic policies. But I support your right to differ. I don't want anybody to get out here and think I'm supporting any other candidate either. Because, frankly, all of them together would equal to me a candidate. And if our people were in a different condition in another state, I would run for president of the United States, and I believe I would win. I think I have the best idea for how this country would go and how we should be positioned in the world. That's not the world of reality now for politics, and therefore I don't think I'm going to announce my candidates in the next 4 or 8 years. However, I would be tempted, and I was tempted to run for president. No reason I said that is no more than bring attention to what I think are some sane political policies. But since we are a nascent group right now, what would I look like running for president of the United States when I can't even keep my block clean? I can't even keep crack off my block. I can't even keep my neighborhood clean. What would I look like running for president when we haven't created one business? No, I mean, people will not beckon you into politics. Let me tell you something, dear people. If we do the next 4 years, the campaign I intend to run in the African-American community. Now, you want to know what I'm running for? I'm running not to be the vice president of African America, because the vice is the guy that keeps his hands on the corruption, do all the dirty work. So I don't want to be the vice president of African America. I do want to be the deputy president of African America. And that job would be to deputize, to organize, deputize, supervise, and check that we have a massive educational program to educate particularly African-American men from pre-K to graduate school so we can produce 100,000 African-American physicians, 500,000 nurse practitioners and physician assistants, to get African-American men in particular in the sciences, in the trade. So African-American men would be in a position to be the head of household. Let these sisters stay home and raise our babies. Some brothers would be bona fide, qualified, and certified. Since there's a shortage of brothers, that should even be some brothers should be able to have 2 or 3 wives. Yeah, that should be the solution. You know, Eritrea, I know Alfred disagrees with that, but he hasn't been on the planet long enough to know these issues, so I didn't expect him to be like that. But Eritrea, we're in a crisis situation with African-American men. You know, I like what Michelle Alexander said, and I'm going too long. Y'all could stop me because, you know, it's not meant to be long-winded on radio, and I'm a preacher, so you have to sometimes take the mic from me. But Michelle Alexander has written a book called The New Jim Crow. Mass incarceration of African American men, I believe is the subtitle. But Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam talks about mass incineration. The African American community has been burnt out. Huh? African American men walking down the street like their pants up with bags full of I don't know what. Why? Because they're just trying to demonstrate to the world that they need help. Our preachers have neglected them. Our rappers have tried to become them. Our intellectuals have ignored them. So we have men walking around who are not even qualified to be the head of households. I know men right now who have abandoned their children. I happen to have two grandchildren that have been abandoned by their fathers. One of my own grandchildren doesn't even know his dad. What kind of hell of a world is this we live in? So I'm not here to beat up on America in general. My job, God has called me to African America, and I'm running for the deputy president. But if situations were a little better, if my people were a little stronger, if you could go in our neighborhoods and find us frying chicken for each other, and Ray Ray could go in there and get him a $17 job and take care of his family while he goes to school to be a physician, I might have been running for the president of the United States. And I think that not one of all the candidates together doesn't have even a complete sentence to compete with what I'm saying for the world.
Well, with that, I was going to ask the question, what do you think African-Americans, particularly African-American men, need to do within their community so that we can see, you know, people in the, you know, in the political arena and business arena in the future? What do you think we need to do so we can get to that area?
First thing African-American men has to do is take a pledge, and that's going to be our Urban Peace men. You can donate to us by donating to imamalfred@gmail.com. Go to PayPal and send your donation so we can do our Urban Peace Camp. We want to go to Houston. We're going to all the major areas where African Americans are. And I want them to do something very simple. I won't raise my hand to kill each other. Stop sleeping with each other's wives and girlfriends. Stop that. Just very simple things. Go out in the community if you got three or four of you together and clean a neighborhood up. Very simple stuff. Meanwhile, if you don't have a GED, go to the library and get you a GED certificate. Learn two words other than curse words every day. Learn two words other than slogans and slangs daily. And do what Booker D. Washington did. Pick up your bootstraps. We're not in Burundi. We're not even in Lagos. We're in African America. There's a lot we can do. But it's my intention to travel to these neighborhoods and motivate. Some very simple things. First, we need an urban peace ministry. You know, Chicago, I believe they had 28 deaths. I tell you something, I'd like to go to the National Press Club and propose that there's 20,000 African-American men with arms to go into these neighborhoods and patrol them and stop the violence. That's what is needed. Men who aren't criminals, who are decent citizens, should patrol these neighborhoods and put the criminals down and have the power to arrest them. And really what they should do is give martial law to some decent African-American citizens to stop this. I tell you, in 3 years, we could clean our people up.
What do you make of the whole Black Lives Matter movement pertaining, you know, to the political arena as well? What do you make of the whole Black Lives Matter?
Well, I think you said something God probably inspired you to say. It's more music than it is anything else. I'm for Black Lives Matter. I think that it has to be. I would like to connect with the people in the Black Lives Matter, but because I think that our lives should matter. And I know why they emphasize Black Lives Matter, because they don't believe our lives have mattered, not even to us. First thing we need to do is say African-American lives matter to us. Therefore, I won't put things in my body that would destroy me, because Black Lives Matter. I won't shoot my brother or start an argument with my sister because Black Lives Matter. I will save and uplift my sister because Black Lives Matter. So I think right now it's almost a cartoon type character. I don't think they really have gotten through Black Lives Matter. And some of you may not even like the terminology Black Lives Matter. So, yeah, so I just think we have to continue to reflect on what does that mean. I don't knock the ideas, but I think it has gotten into wrong hands. We are always talking about what somebody else is doing. And I'm going to tell you what Scripture said. Let me first go to the Quran. God says he will never change the condition of a people till they change what's troubling our soul. What is troubling our soul? Lack of responsibility for our own lives, that our own lives matter. Let me tell you what the Bible says. The Bible says, the two verses that come to mind, but I'm going to first deal with one I should have dealt with. Let me just give one. Seek you first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things shall be added unto you. Well, Jesus was asked a question. He said, Master, when will the kingdom come? He said the kingdom would come without observation, for the kingdom of God is within you. And when we overthrow envy, when we overthrow jealousy, when we overthrow anger, black lives will really matter. To us and others will see us with our lives matter. Let me just simply bring it home a little closer. I knew a family where I was growing up called the Brown family. There were six brothers. They were huge. Nobody messed with the Browns. Because you know what? They knew you would get your behind whipped. Well, the Brown family would respect it. Do you know what? Let me give you another social example. There was a black, so-called black Muslims, and they lost Foundation of Islam in the 50s and 60s. Nobody really messed with it, including the police. Why? Because we really believe that black lives matter. And the Browns obviously believe that the Browns' lives matter. And because if you would mess with a Brown, you had to mess with six, seven powerful set of fists. And no one was prepared to deal with that. Because black lives matter to them and matter to others.
So you're saying that the African-American male needs to get himself, and not only African-American male, but the African-American community should get him, in order for him to ever get anywhere within his country, he should get himself established business-wise and in every other facet in order for him to go places.
Well, first thing he has to do is get himself centered in himself and say, I'm a human being. And I demand of myself, just like I put you all in the home. I don't give you any demands in the home that I don't put on myself, right? And I'll admit to you, I said, well, Dad is wrong on this. Dad is wrong. We have to set a code of ethics. I don't tell you I'm the perfect dad. I'm striving to be. I think I'm a better dad than my dad. And my dad was phenomenal. But I want you to be a better dad than I am. And I want your children to be better dads than you are. And we work constantly to improve ourselves. Now, we say we follow the Prophet Muhammad, right? You're Muslim, you follow the Prophet Muhammad. You have friends that follow Jesus the Christ, right? The Christians should be, I can't tell a Christian how to be a better Christian, but I could suggest to them that they study the life and works of Jesus Christ, and they can be better. But let me tell you what Muhammad was. Before he was the prophet, he was in a society that was working on improving this human being. So every day I should examine myself and look at myself and say, Alfred, did you tie your shoes? Did you clean your room? Did you put things back? Did you make your environment nicer? That's what we need to do. But the Prophet Muhammad was a part of a group called the Hunafi. He was working to improve his human nature even before. Oh, he was a prophet. That should tell us you don't need religion to make you a better person. You should be working with other groups of people. You should be sitting in a self-criticism class, thinking with others how we can be better. I should be telling Alfred, Alfred, how could you be better? Alfred, you should tell Daddy how he could be better. Just remember he's Daddy, though. No, there has to be authority. I'll take it, and then when I say, oh, Alfred, that's enough. And I tell my children, don't you ever tell me it's enough. I'm the father. But I take suggestions when they're worthwhile. And sometimes even they aren't worthwhile, I'll take them. And sometimes they may be worthwhile, but I'll be ultimately the judge. But that's how we have to have it. But the whole goal is to be over and over and over trying to make ourselves better and better. And that's what African-American men need to be. And when people see that, I rarely have had any bad encounters with the police because I carry myself in a way that I don't invite that. And as an African-American man, I walk around with a suit and tie every day. Oh, you don't have to do that. Yes, I do. Because I want people to know I'm very serious. I walk upright so I can send a bearing. I don't walk sloppily. I'm not saying men shouldn't have the right to do that. I just don't have the right.
So the African-American, you're saying that the African-American male and, you know, the female as well should look inward on himself and see what's going on within himself in order to progress, correct?
Absolutely.
With that being said, what are some of the points, you know, that he should look at? Or name a few main points that he should look at in order for some progression.
First he, and I said he because the man should stand up first, the father. Then he should, well, let's stay with the man, and then I'm going to, you know, make some suggestions to the women. The women are not, still not in bad shape as the men. The women, they reflect that the men are weak. If we had more men who would be men, the woman may cuss us out behind the back and say, girl, let me tell you something. Let me tell you, so-and-so, the girl, he brings food home every day. He take care of me, give me the money, girl. I don't know what, blah, 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 blah. But he don't let me do this. He tell me you can't come outside with no rolls now. He tell me you can't eat, girl. He don't let me do this. He don't let me do that. But you know what? I love my boo. Now, boo, if boo is a provider, and if somebody comes to try to destroy boo, his boo, and he knocked him out. She said, girl, my boo is a real man. He knocked him out. See, to be a man is more than muscle. What we begin to think, a man is just a penis. That's the first thing African-American men have to rise above. And you have some of our African-American men even walk down the street just grabbing over to their private part because they feel that's the only thing they have. Well, that's the point of slavery. So that's why Imam Alfred is on the job of making men. That were mixed men. So then, I'm not going to talk on the sisters. I asked the sisters who listen to the broadcast to join us in the conversation at 805-727-7013. Let's be men. I push you to be the best academically, right? If you're a B student, become an A student. If you're an A student, you got enough A student, well, find somebody else to tutor. Find somebody who can't read. Teach them to read. Find somebody who can't write. Help yourself. Anytime you pick up another person that looks like you, you're picking up yourself. Particularly the African-American male.
So it should be a complete and total operation where everybody moves the other person. Almost like a teamwork kind of thing.
Absolutely. Look, Alfred, there's nobody in the world can play basketball better than us, huh? And if we get back to baseball, then nobody can play baseball better than us. We took the game over, okay? That's why they had to go and get Latinos to do it, because they got tired of seeing African Americans being projected in their home, and they thought back that 50 years ago this guy was a slave. So the Caucasians got jealous. The same thing with basketball. If we don't watch out, they're going to snatch us all out of that, and they're going to start getting people from Russia and other places. They get tired. We're good at it. Football's the same thing. You know, some African American right now catching a ball right now. Balling as they were. But imagine we took that energy. Oh, man, they got options. You had the option to learn to play baseball, football, basketball, right? There's some African American right now in the snowy parts of Wisconsin, a non-town, bouncing a ball because he thinks he's going to be the Kobe Bryant, right, or Michael Jordan. I heard Michael Jordan, he's going to make a comeback. You know, so we know we can master sports. Why can't we master in the world of education? Why can't we master in the world of business? Collectively, as teams. When you get together with another group of African American men, let's talk about how we can make some money together, legitimately. Let's not say we're going to try what Nicky Bonds failed at. He went to jail, right? Alpro. Just read Fed magazine. Oh, y'all didn't know I read Fed magazine, did you? Well, I read it because I know you read it. So I want to know what's going on. Don and Diva. These are the popular publications. All of because we want to be big and doing something wrong because we believe that we're an animal. We are bought into the bad press they have given us. So the first thing we got to do is change our image of ourselves. And you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. And let me tell you how you can participate. Y'all gave money to Bernie Sanders. If I could get 2 million of y'all to send me $10, I could travel throughout these United States of America and go to every neighborhood where we are campaign style and call our people back to life. Would you help me? Some of you are. I get a check for some of you every month. Because we're not here just talking. We're here to motivate, to activate, to fire us up, and to make us move.
So, Eman Alfred, tell us what you're going to do with that money. What are you going to do when you get that? Are you going to go on a tour with the, you know?
Yes. First of all, we want to get out of the blogosphere. We've been 4 years in blogosphere because we don't have the financial resources to get out of it. We want to be on radio and television. We want to be out there. I know I have a greater message for African-Americans and consequently for other people in America, but particularly for African people from Rio de Janeiro to Halifax, Nova Scotia. I have a special message with them. So we want to go on national radio. We want to go on national TV. We like to buy time, a half hour each day. And I tell you, if I could do that, then I could come into the neighborhood. And I know I can transform people's lives. I've seen it. I've seen people go from the post office to becoming physicians. And you've met some of these people from my inspiration. I've seen a man who was a dope fiend with no teeth in his mouth. Well, he wasn't a complete dope fiend, he told me. He said he was on the methadone program. He was taking methadone daily. And he went on and got a GED, went on and got an associate's degree, got a bachelor's degree, had a master's degree, and he retired with 2 degrees, and he has 2 homes, one state and one in a warm climate. I won't name him because I want you to probably know who he is. But I can cite many people. Imagine if I could be multiplied and I reached out to many more people. I have, every time I travel, somebody tell me, oh, I became a physician as a result of one of your lectures. So we have life-giving teachers. So what we would do with the money, we would just travel and reproduce ourselves more. We would create an institute to train public speakers in our methodology. They could be women, to be others, to do workshops, to teach people, to coach people, to make people. If I were allowed to be loose and African-American, I'm convinced I could produce hundreds of thousands of physicians. We would compete with the Indians. We compete with the Arabs. We don't have to worry about competing with white America because, sad to say, white America now is on life support. It needs a lot of help. If the best of our candidates is what we see on TV, we ain't got to worry about them. We got to pray for them. Almighty God, have mercy on white folks because they're having a hard time.
All right, so in closing, what are some of the things you want to hammer home? You know, what are some of the talking points you want to hammer home?
What I'd like to hammer home is this is the greatest time in the history of black America and the worst of times. Let's first talk about the greatest time. Our ex-slave master is on the ropes. Almighty God, please grant them more mercy and time until we can take over in the ring. And Almighty God, grant us the time that we can compete in the global society, not against our ex-slave masters, because, God, you know there's no competition. God, you know for a fact that when the greatest country ever known to man has people talking as like my brother would talk in the pool, or worse, and that candidates have turned into a 3- or 4-ring circuit, even our best candidates sound like a shrill 6th grade school election. with no real proposals to solve our deficits, no real proposals to solve our defense problems, no real proposals that even endear confidence in themselves or others, no real proposal to defeat all kinds of insane groups that masquerade as, but they're not masquerading, God, you know, but they're actually madmen who, under the guise of the religion of Islam, have picked up the fight. We don't have even a plan for them. So God grant them mercy. Grant them a respite until we can wake up and take over the responsibilities to enter the professions, to enter the trades, and to enter business. And when there's a mass march into the trades, mass march into business, mass march into industry, the professions, then we're going to be okay. We've seen the Indians just came here 10 years ago, not 20. And they have a man that's a United States attorney for the Southern District of New York, one of the most powerful law enforcement agencies in the world. We can get there. I'm not saying everybody's going to embrace it. I don't expect the Trumpers to come out. I don't expect the trombones to come out. I don't expect them to say happy days are here or there. We're going to compete. Just like you compete on the basketball court. Just like you compete on the football field. Just like Tiger Woods. Unfortunately, Tiger became like an alley cat. However, once we get back that Tiger power again, nobody's going to defeat us on the golf course. Nobody's going to defeat us on the basketball court. And that's a sign to me from God that we will not be defeated. These great days, dark days, but I am convinced, as Dr. King said, he said he may not get there with you, but he believed that we as a people would get to the promised land. But Dr. King, we've gotten to the promised land. And Dr. King, God forgive us. We are now stumbling and bumbling and fumbling in the promised land. But God, please bless us to stop stumbling, stop bumbling, stop fumbling, and take the path and make the touchdown to go right on to the victory post.
All right, so that concludes our episode of Religion Means Alive. If anybody has any questions, they can just tap one on their phone.
Another 5 minutes to see what anybody wants to come out.
All right. If anybody if anybody has a question, they can tap one on their phone in order to ask a question. But if not, then we will proceed to conclude this broadcast if there aren't any questions. So we're just gonna go through the phone and decipher through.
I'm going to be back again on Mondays and Thursdays, every Monday and Thursday, and some Saturdays. Alfred Y. Muhammad, the Millennium Hour, will be in on Saturdays. Sometimes we're going to come back on interview people, so we're going to be lining up guests. We're glad to see you. We see California's back with us, so we're going to be on every day. Peace be on our noble and honorable listeners. I'm going to turn you back on the hands of Alfred Y. Muhammad, who is a millennialist for the millennial generation, but is not, in fact, a person that's gone to sleep in the millennial generation. He's had a full cup of coffee, minus the caffeine, and he's ready to fired up, ready to go.
All right. Well, with that being said, this concludes our episode of Religion Means Alive. We'll see you on the air tomorrow, same time at 7 o'clock. Thank you.